This is Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan in for Marty Moscowane. Five Dallas police officers were shot and killed last night following a peaceful Black Lives Matter protest. Last word we know, we've heard that three suspects are in custody, though it's not certain how long they will be held because it's now believed there was only one shooter. This is apparently a lone wolf attack who was apparently killed by police. The motivation we're hearing a hatred of police, and we heard this earlier this morning from Dallas Police Chief David Brown. And we have a clip from Police Chief Brown, and we're going to play that right now.
We don't feel much support most days. Let's not make today most days. Please, we need your support to be able to protect you from men like these who carried out this tragic, tragic event.
And President Obama, who is in Poland at a NATO conference, also weighed in earlier this morning.
We still don't know all the facts. What we do know is that there has been a vicious, calculated, and despicable attack on law enforcement. Police in Dallas were on duty during doing their jobs, keeping people safe during peaceful protests.
And we are opening the phone lines early this hour on Radio Times in case you would like to weigh in as well. The number is 888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. We have, to start us off this hour, Mark Kelly Tyler is joining us. He is in studio. He is pastor of Mother Bethel African Methodist Episcopal Church, and he can talk about, and among other things, the Black Lives Matter protests that happened across the country last night. They were peaceful. There was one in Philadelphia. But first of all, welcome, Mark Kelly Tyler, to Radio Times.
Well, thank you. And glad to be here. I wish it was under better circumstances.
Yes. First of all, what is your reaction to both the comments from President Obama and also from a Dallas police chief, David Brown, both of whom were calling for support for police officers?
You know, I think what I hadn't heard superintendent or commissioner chief Brown's comments until just now. And what really struck me is his characterization that most days they don't feel supported. I mean, that really, you know, hit me because that's the exact same thing that you hear from people who are marching, who are in the community, that feel as though the police don't support, you know, support our community. And so it just seems like there's this huge gulf between, you know, two communities that absolutely need one another. We need police. The police need us. And that is just really, that's really hard to hear. Because I don't think that's what many of us who are marching, you know, that's what this is about. What it's about are is a focus on people that we see are bad actors and a system that supports them, and recognizing that most police officers are, you know, good men and women who do their job and they do it. I mean, a lot of times sacrificing for people they don't even particularly care for or agree with. But we see a system that, you know, time and time again, you know, just kind of has a blanket covering of protection. And so it's hard to kind of parse out those things. I'm a pastor of persons who are law enforcement. You know, I have family members who are law enforcement. I have friends who are law enforcement. And I just have the utmost appreciation for what they do. And so it is jarring to hear a chief say that. And so that's really kind of my first reaction and even hearing it.
What was your initial reaction when you heard of the shootings? What went through your mind?
Well, I thought about yesterday. So yesterday I helped organize a march that had over 1,000 people, very spontaneous. We're here in the middle of the AME Church, our general conference. It's an every 4-year meeting, largest governing body that we have. It rotates from place to place. It's our bicentennial. We've got about 20,000 to 30,000 visitors in the city, and I'm a delegate. But we went to our bishops on yesterday and said, you know, we have to say something about these two shootings in Baton Rouge and in Minneapolis. Our pastors from those cities are here at this meeting. I know them well, Reverend Herman Kelly in Baton Rouge, Reverend Nazim Fakir in Minneapolis. And so I said, we can't be in this meeting and not say something. The young people were organizing as well. We brought those things together. And so, you know, we had this incredibly large, peaceful march through Center City, rallied at Arch Street United Methodist. Before the march started, Commissioner Ross came down personally to the beginning of the march, met me at the front of the line, and, you know, we greeted each other. We're about the same age and, you know, same generation. We absolutely disagree around issues of stop and frisk, or as he calls, legal pedestrian stops. But, you know, he was there, and he wanted to make sure we were safe. I'm watching the tweets as SEPTA Chief Nessel is tweeting about the march, you know, another successful, peaceful march. He's tweeting. During the march, the thing that struck me is Lieutenant Wilson, who is with Civil Affairs. I've got to know a lot of the Civil Affairs folks well because they're always with us on the marches. Mm-hmm. For some reason, his image in front of the march just kept, I was drawn to it through the entire march. I wanted to post this on Facebook today, but just didn't have the time this morning.
Sure.
And as I'm watching him, I'm kind of thinking in my mind, like, wow, this guy is out here. And, you know, you're hearing chants that if you're an officer, it's probably hard to hear. You know, I mean, just the chants that come out of a crowd like that, that's outraged about these things. And I'm thinking, these people are here protecting us. And if someone attacked us in the middle of this march, they would instantly defend us. And I mean, my hat is off to anyone who would do that. That's incredible.
So how do you think, this this shooting in Dallas will shape attitudes within the Black Lives Matter movement toward relations with police?
Well, so first of all, I want to clarify, our march was not a Black Lives Matter march.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, BLM has become an official movement. And, you know, we support those young folk here in the city. There's a local chapter and a state chapter. I know the leadership of both well. This was organized by the Black Clergy of Philadelphia. This was organized by Power. This was organized by the AME Church and the NAACP Youth and College Division. So BLM had nothing to do with the official march, though that's what has been characterized, you know, in the press. But to the larger question, what will this do ultimately to this? I'm not exactly sure. I hope that it will serve to bring us closer. Again, I go back to those comments because if you talk to the young people in the streets, that's exactly what they say about the police, that they don't support us. They don't want us. They don't like us. They talk, you know, to us in a way that is, you know, talking down to us. And to hear police say that the folk in the community don't want us, don't like us. I mean, that we can't survive that way. We have to come together. And I've spoken to Commissioner Ross a number of times, and I will tell you that we agree on much more than we disagree about. And we both want to see a city that is safe, residents who can sit out on their stoop in the summertime and not have to worry about, you know, being shot on the street or violence in the streets by regular citizens or the police.
And I do want to mention, too, we at Radio Times have reached out to the Philadelphia Police Department to see what, if anything, might change in terms of protective measures taken for their own members in the wake of the Dallas mass shooting. And they're still putting that together. So we expect to hear from them on Radio Times over the next week or so. Last year, Mark Kelly Tyler, the Justice Department concluded there is significant strife between the Philadelphia community and the police department, and it recommended wholesale changes in procedures and training. And not only taking the shootings in Dallas into account, but also the shootings in Baton Rouge and near St. Paul, Minnesota last night or this week. Have you seen changes in relations, you know, since this conclusion from the Justice Department between the community and the police department? Or the police department regarding the community?
Right. Well, I mean, again, so I get a little bit more information than most because I'm just so zeroed in on this and have a chance to talk to Calvin Anderson quite a bit, you know, the head of our Philadelphia Police Advisory Commission. And so we know that a number of the changes that were recommended by the DOJ have already been implemented. So, again, I applaud Commissioner Ross for moving quickly on some of the things that were, you know, some of the low-hanging fruit, if you will. But there's still a lot of work to be done. And so as you talk about the perception and the interaction between the larger community and policing, that has not really changed much. And
what needs to be done, in your opinion?
Well, listen, first of all, I think that a lot of this goes back to just the history of our country, and that you can't wipe away attitudes and mythology that has been embedded in people for 200 to 300 years. So if you have been told all along that a group of people are not fully human, for example, and that don't deserve the rights of other people who are considered to be, quote unquote, fully human, it's going to impact the way you treat them in every aspect of life. It's not just policing that we're talking about. We're talking about wages. We're talking about public education. Mm-hmm. We're talking about housing. So it's not something that can. So you ask the question. I mean, that's a big question. I mean, a lot of this has to do with attitude change. Mm-hmm.
So, and regarding the two shootings that happened earlier this week, sure, in Baton Rouge and near St. Paul, Minnesota, we don't have all the facts yet. There's, mm-hmm, been a lot of information out there via cell phone, video, et cetera, pictures, without knowing the facts, without knowing about charges that might be pending. What was your reaction to those shootings?
Well, I was numb. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was really the word. In fact, if I wasn't in this big AME meeting and kind of pushed to do something because people, everybody around me is looking like, okay, well, you've been talking about this, you've been doing things, we're all here in your city, you know, what are we going to do? I don't know that I would have actually tried to organize anything, because it was really just the numbness of, you know, trying to get over the event in Baton Rouge, and you wake up the next morning and then boom, this happens in Minneapolis. Sometimes it just becomes overwhelming and you wonder when it's going to stop. But, you know, I really wanted to continue to lift up the fact that at least on my part, my efforts have not been anti-police. And the people that I work with, especially within the group Power, Philadelphians Organized to Witness, Empower, and Rebuild, you know, interfaith group of clergy, Christians, Jews, Muslims, and others, white, black, everything in between, we recognize the value of law enforcement. We support, we respect. And so we're talking about specific issues of behavior and departmental policy, but not people.
So, and we're up against a break here in a moment or so, but I was curious about the use of cell phone video and how, mm-hmm, the information kind of flashes out there again, mm-hmm, before all the facts are in. Mm-hmm. Do you think that helps or hinders the process in the eventual movement toward justice in these cases?
Well, I would have to say that it ultimately helps. I mean, in the short term, you could say it hurts, depending on how you define hurt. But I think that it helps because so oftentimes it has been the word of a person against, you know, an officer. And almost 10 times out of 10, you know, society is going to just kind of defer to, if the officer said it, then it just had to have happened that, mm-hmm, way. And we have seen it so many times that a statement is made and then all of a sudden footage comes out later that absolutely contradicts what was said. So I think that really demonstrates that, number one, we need to move to a place of body cameras. I think that should just be mandatory, with audio as well to document everything, and dash cam cameras.
All right. We're up against the break. Mark Kelly Tyler is with us for at least part of the hour. He is pastor of Mother Bethel African Methodist Episcopal Church. Dorothy Johnson Spite of Mothers in Charge will be along, as well as James Peterson, director of Africana Studies at Lehigh University and host of The Remix. We are talking about the shootings in Dallas, 5 police officers dead. Also, the shootings earlier this week of 2 African-American men by officers. This is Radio Times. This is Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in today for Marty Mosca-Wayne, and we are looking at the mass shooting in Dallas, 5 police officers dead, apparently at the hands of a lone wolf shooter. This followed a peaceful Black Lives Matter protest last night in Dallas. A number of police officers are hospitalized. Also, this note, we are preempting our second hour of Radio Times today. That's Radio Times in Review, because we're going to join NPR special coverage of Attorney General Loretta Lynch and hear her remarks on the shootings in Dallas at 11 o'clock this morning. So stay with us here at WHYY for that. This hour, we have Mark Kelly Tyler, who is pastor of the Mother Bethel African Methodist Episcopal Church. And also joining us now via phone, Dorothy Johnson Spite, who is founder and executive director of Mothers in Charge, a violence prevention and education group. Welcome back to Radio Times, Dorothy.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. So I will ask of you what I asked of Mark Kelly Tyler earlier in the hour. We played some clips from David Brown, chief of Dallas Police Department, and also President Obama, clips both supportive of police. And David Brown, the chief of Dallas Police, says they are not feeling support. They are asking for support of police. And I'm curious, what is your reaction to start off to those comments?
Well, you know, first of all, let me just say that this has really brought up a lot of emotions for myself and the women, mothers in charge, women of the organization, who too have lost children to violence. It kind of helps us to be able to connect with this because we've lost children and we're touching our own pain every time we kind of, every time this comes up, and this has happened in the last few weeks so many times, too many times, with the death of the two young men that were killed at the hands of the police and now the police officers that were killed. Support for the police officers, yes, but not for those that take it upon themselves to take the lives of innocent people or unarmed people.
And
we cannot support.
And again, as the process is unfolding, most of us have seen or heard some of the cell phone video in the cases in Baton Rouge and, you know, Philando Castile in Falcon Heights, Minnesota, and Alton Sterling in Baton Rouge, who were shot and killed by police officers earlier this week. The details are unfolding. And Dorothy, you know, when we see those cell phone videos, it's easy to say, okay, this looks like, you know, this is what happened. And Mark and Kelly Tyler and I were talking about this earlier. What is your reaction to the use of these videos, and do they help the process of justice, in your opinion?
Well, I think they do. I think what is most troubling for me is that what happened while this woman, his wife, his significant other, and his child was in the car, she's videoing, and he's still in the commission of what he was doing and taking his life. Like, it didn't matter. And some of the comments that, you know, we've been texting all morning, you know, the women in the organization and some of the elderly women, me included, but some of the older women have equated that kind of thing with the lynching and things that happened many, many years ago, that, you know, men were dragged out of their homes and hung on trees and, you know, murdered in front of their families. Mm-hmm. So, as I said, all this kind of brings back stuff, and it's really heavy, and it's overwhelming for us at times. You know,
are you surprised? Are you surprised that in light of the shootings that have happened, say over the last year, the it seems like we hear of a different incident happening, perhaps every few weeks or months, that this sort of incident apparently happened again twice this past week, and in terms of perhaps again, I'm thinking increased police awareness, increased training that might be happening in police departments across the country. Dorothy,
I think that is definitely needed, but I also think that the police need to be responsible in terms of looking at those that are in uniform carrying guns. Look at their history. Look at trainings for them. Look at the psychological, you know, impact of some of the behaviors that have happened even with some of these officers prior to, you know, a shooting like this. All of those things have to be looked at. Yes, definitely more training, but also looking at the mental health and the psychological situations of many of these officers that in some cases have been written up or have been known to have a history of violent confrontations or aggressive kinds of situations where they behave. So mm-hmm. I think all of that needs to be looked at. We know that not every police officer is, you know, someone who's going to take a gun and shoot an unarmed person.
Sure.
But sometimes there are indications of that kind of behavior. There's some type of handwriting on the wall that needs to be looked at and identified before these situations happen.
And so there is anger, Mark Kelly Tyler, following the shootings mm-hmm. this past week. And then you turn around and you have a situation like this in Dallas in which these police officers are shot. A real juxtaposition of feelings.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, yesterday somebody got up to go to work and they didn't come home. And you know, as you talk about, what are your first thoughts? A lot of people were thinking about the son of Alton Sterling in Baton Rouge, and I couldn't even watch the clip because I'd seen so much about it, so I didn't want to see it. And so people were talking, though, about they couldn't get out of their ears the crying and the sobbing of his teenage son at the press conference. And right now, their children of those five officers, I'm certain, who are doing the exact same thing.
Sure.
You know, this is there's no upside to this. And violence is what, you know, has us in this place, and violence cannot get us out of it. And so that is certainly not the answer. But I certainly appreciate the words of Dorothy Spike. Mrs. Spike, because she sounds a lot like Tonya Brown Dickerson, who spoke yesterday at our rally. And Tonya, in speaking about the two young men who were killed, made such a powerful point. You know, her son Brandon Tate Brown was killed by Philadelphia PD. And she said that, you know, those sons were hurt. You know, every time she sees something like this, she has to relive it as well. And so, again, I mean, it's just we're in this vicious cycle that we can't get out of by trying to fight our way out of it. Mm-hmm. We've got to come together. And whatever that gulf that is between us, and there are a lot of reasons for that gulf, a lot of historical reasons that are not going to just simply go away. It's going to be some tough work that has to be done that we've been, I think, in my opinion, just ignoring for too many years.
Compassion on both sides?
Well, not just compassion. I mean, there has to be some honesty and truth-telling. Listen, I mean, you know, we try to treat symptoms in America instead of going for the root cause of the disease. So if racism is the root cause, the symptoms are going to pop up everywhere. So that's why I said earlier in the show, this is not just law enforcement. It's how children are treated in schools. You know, whether it's, you know, being put into a track that leads to a dead end or sent right on up to college and the university, whether you're talking about healthcare treatment or opportunities for jobs or where you even get to live, that all of these things are symptoms of the larger disease that we have yet to come to grips with in this nation, and that is American racism. And until we deal with that, we're going to continue to have problems with law enforcement and everything else.
All right. I opened up the phone lines early on Radio Time so we could get listener reaction, 888-477-9499. And we do have calls coming in, so let's get to them. Joey in West Philadelphia, welcome to Radio Times.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to say something in response to what the Reverend said about, like, attitudes have to change. I think not only do attitudes have to change with the nation as a whole and how white folks regard us, but also how we regard ourselves. Nobody makes protests like this when black folks kill other black folks. Like, no mother should have to bury their son regardless of whether he's killed by a white cop or by some corner boy on a corner battling over drug turf. So either way, we need to completely regard ourselves in a whole different light and just deal with ourselves differently. Because, like, until that happens, until we learn how to care about ourselves and show to the rest of the nation that we know how to care about ourselves, nobody else is going to care about us.
Joey, thank you.
Keep getting treated the same way.
We're going to get some reaction from Mark Kelly, Tyler first. Thank you so much for the call to Radio Times, Joey.
Well, listen, I mean, certainly, you know, crime is crime. Violence is violence. And at the end of the day, if you're a parent like Mrs. Spites and the moms, it doesn't give you any comfort whether your child was killed by a black person or a white police officer, really. I mean, at the end of the day. But, you know, I think that to reduce this problem that we're dealing with right now to simply, if we respected ourselves, this wouldn't happen. I think that misses the larger point, with all due respect to Joey, that, you know, when you talk about the interaction around race and policing, this is not happening because we are not, quote unquote, respecting ourselves and treating ourselves better. Look at the famous tennis star who was in New York just standing in front of a, you know, 5-star hotel, who's jumped on by plainclothes officers, you know, beaten up. And, you know, if he hadn't been famous and hadn't been caught on video, nothing would have ever happened. And so that's the kind of interaction that happens all the time, regardless of whether we are, quote unquote, respectable or not, whether we're law abiding or not, whether we have a license to carry or not. And so I don't want us to miss the point about the part that race plays in this.
Dorothy Johnson Spite, your reaction?
Yeah, I agree with Joey. I don't think she's missing a point. I think she's just making a different point today. And I think all of these points need to be considered. And the Reverend and I have had this conversation before about black-on-black crime, the folks who are killing each other who look like one another. So that's an issue we have to also address. And as you stated, it doesn't matter to a mother who's lost her child. That pain is the same no matter who pulled the trigger. But we must address all of these issues. It's not a one issue. It's an issue that we as a community, especially as an African-American community, need to address across the board. Racism, yes. It's the elephant in the room that no one wants to talk about. But you know what? That other issue that Joey mentioned, that's the same thing. It's the elephant in the room that no one wants to talk about. And we need to be talking about both of those issues because in our community, it's prevalent. It's mothers come in my office every single day who had to bury their children. And their children and the mothers and parents are worried about their teenage children going just back and forth to school or to the store or anywhere in the community. And it's not always a fear of a white officer murdering their child as much as it is someone who looks like them. Mm-hmm. So it's an issue that we have to address. We can't overlook either of these issues.
Jared,
they both are big issues.
So Mrs. Spice, this is my only point is this, is that I agree that crime is crime, violence is violence, and it all should stop. But to think that somehow the reason that we're being, you know, that these incidents like Baton Rouge and Minneapolis keep happening is somehow because of our own behavior with one another. Every race of people, you know, does violence to each other. So white people kill white people pretty much at the same rate as black people kill black people and Asians kill Asians. And yet they are not having the same kind of interactions with law enforcement as a result of it. And that's my point. The point is simply that if Joey's trying to say that if we were only better people as a race of people, that somehow we wouldn't, you know, have this, then all these problems would go away. And I disagree.
All right. We've got
I don't think she's saying that the problem will go away. I think she's saying that the problem needs to be addressed, and that's what I was saying.
Another show there, Dorothy, and let's get back to the well, again, the focus this hour, we're coming out of this horrendous shooting in Dallas. We've got five Dallas police officers shot and killed last night. We have David Brown, who's the chief of the Dallas Police Department, saying police are not getting support. He's African-American. Mm-hmm. And Mark Kelly Tyler, would more minority representation on police departments, in particular in the Philadelphia Police Department, do you think that would help with relationships with the community?
I mean, it's a start, but I don't know. Again, I think that the systemic issues that are really, you know, confronting us, and it's not just Philadelphia, it's not just Dallas, it's not just big cities. This is across the country. In fact, our meeting in downtown with the AME Church, we're on five continents and 39 countries. And you listen to AMEs in other countries, and these stories resonate with them because they have the same problems. So we're talking about the Western world and the way the Western world has, over the last 400 to 500 years, dealt with black bodies. And to me, that becomes the bigger issue. So, yes, more black officers in Philadelphia, that's a start, but much more about a system and a systemic way of actually treating people fairly.
What are you hearing from your congregation this morning, if you've had a chance to hear from them regarding this shooting, this mass shooting in Dallas?
Well, I've been following social media, so more so persons who are just, you know, who are AMEs throughout, you know, our what we call our connection. Yeah. And I do think that there's a great sense of heartbreak about this, and that this is absolutely nobody who I know that I work with would ever want to see this. And there's much pain and anger and outrage about it as well. People may not know how necessarily to express it. I think sometimes people are reluctant to say anything positive because you've been so critical of law enforcement that sometimes now all of a sudden you feel like they don't want to hear it from you anyway. But people are deeply saddened by this as well.
All right, let's get back to the phones. Ahmed in Wilmington, Delaware, you are live on Radio Times.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Great show, very timely as always, very sobering as well. A couple of quick comments. Firstly, I wish that the media, all of us in general, would start calling this act that happened in Dallas early this morning. I wish we'd start calling it terrorism, since that's what it is, unfortunately, by all definitions. Secondly, regarding the particular issue about race, I'd just like to make a point, and I hope the irony isn't lost on everybody, but particularly police officers and law enforcement and the white population in this country, that when a minority group, racial or religious, commits a heinous act, all members of that group are expected to either apologize on behalf of that minority group or religion, or at least take a stand and say, hey, we didn't do this. Those were bad apples, not in our name, etc. And that's fine. We should do that to an extent. However, I don't see that same sort of responsibility being thrust upon the white population in general in this country, or on law enforcement, to say that they were bad apples. Those police officers who murdered somebody, unarmed, African American or not, those police officers were bad, etc. The rest of us are not bad. Mm-hmm. That responsibility isn't thrust upon them. Okay. And I think that, again, speaks to the racial divide in this country, how we treat minorities mm-hmm. versus non-minorities. And that goes directly to the point the Reverend was making.
Thank you for your call. We are up against the clock here, and it's worth saying we do not know yet what the background is of the shooter, this apparent lone wolf shooter in Dallas is. But Dorothy Johnson Spite, what is your reaction to Ahmed's comment?
Well, I agree. I think that oftentimes law enforcement, they know who the bad apples are, but they're silent. I guess it's that code of silence. So they will not call out or not speak about, their fellow comrades in blue that are, on the edge or would commit such a, act as we've seen with the two gentlemen in this last week. So I think that the silence, that call of silence, prevents them. And maybe it's the fear of not getting the support that they need on the street or whatever that, whole business is. But it needs to be, as Ahmed talked about, it needs to be looked at. It needs to be identified. If you're in any type of organization and you know that there are folks in that organization with you that are making you look bad or causing, issues around your you as a officer, in this case, of doing the right thing and being an upstanding officer, and then there's someone who is, putting that at risk in terms of their behavior, then they should be called out by whomever.
All right, Dorothy, I've got to stop you there because we've got the break coming right up, but we're going to talk more about this in just a moment. Reaction to the mass shooting of police officers, 5 dead in Dallas. Stay with us for more of Radio Times. You're listening to Radio Times on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan in today for Marty Moscawain. In this hour, we are getting reaction to the mass shooting in Dallas. 5 police officers shot and killed, another 7 wounded following a peaceful Black Lives Matter protest last night in Dallas. There were a number of marches across the country, including in Philadelphia, all of them peaceful. But again, we are getting reaction. We've got guests this hour in studio, Mark Kelly Tyler, pastor of Mother Bethel African Methodist Episcopal Church. And on the phone, we've got Dorothy Johnson Spite, who is founder and executive director of Mothers in Charge, Violence Prevention and Education Group. And we've opened up the phones, 888-477-9499. You can also send us a note at radiotimes@whyy.org or tweet us at WHYY Radio Time. So let's get to some of these calls and comments. Norman in Chester County, let's go to you now. You're live on Radio Times.
Thanks for taking my call. I just want to say that your guests are making some good points. But what I haven't heard is specific to the shooting in Louisiana. Those officers rolled up to an incident where they were told that there was a man brandishing a weapon. That man ended up fighting with the cops, indeed had a weapon, and was shot. So that's much different than what happened in other instances.
All right. Thanks for the call to Radio Times, Norman. Again, we're talking about stories that are unfolding this week. We still do not have all the details. And we are. Do you have any reaction to this to Norman's statement, Mark Kelly Tyler?
Sure.
As details continue to unfold, and it's still, again, we have the cell phone video.
Right.
We don't quite perhaps know everything, but some of the story might seem to be obvious.
So, I mean, we don't have it all, but what I've so I believe the part that I read is that the weapon that they recovered, according to the story, it was in his pocket. So it was not in his hand, and that he was tackled from behind. And that if you, you know, so if you go back to the DOJ report in Philadelphia, which I've read and can pull out in that particular study, it says that the Philadelphia Police Department, which is probably reflective of most departments, really lacks around de-escalation techniques and the idea of how do you handle. So if you know someone has a weapon, you know, your first order of business is to try to save the lives of others around, but then also to protect that person as well. You don't want to kill anybody. So we have seen places like in Philadelphia, for example, where there was a white gentleman at a bar with a gun, brandishing it, waving it around while drunk, and the police stayed there and talked him down. It's like, come on, guy, you're having a bad day. Put the gun down. Now, black people have been killed with just the fact that someone said they had a gun, even though police have not even seen it. And that's the point I'm trying to make to Norman and to others, is that, you know, we are, you know, you have to prove yourself innocent as opposed to other persons who are given the benefit of the doubt. And I think that's what troubles me most.
I'd like to bring into the conversation James Peterson, who is Director of Africana Studies and Associate Professor of English at Lehigh University. And you might know him as host of The Remix, yes, weekly podcast here at WHYY in Philadelphia. And I'll ask you the same thing that I asked Mark Kelly Tyler and Dorothy Johnson Spite. Just to, you know, initially we are talking about the shootings in Dallas to start. We're also talking about the separate shootings in Baton Rouge and St. Paul, Minnesota, this past week. So first, your reaction to the horrendous news from Dallas overnight, James.
Well, I mean, I don't really know how to process many of the things that have occurred over the course of this week. I think we still need to sort of get more information out of Dallas before we jump to conclusions. I've been on social media and on news media all morning, and there are a lot of people jumping to conclusions, and I think, you know, they're just sort of confirming that they may have identified who one of the folks involved in the conspiracy is, but we just can't draw too many conclusions from this. Yeah. Here's what we know. We know that the relationship between law enforcement and the communities that they're charged with serving and protecting is a broken relationship in this nation, and we've got to be able to address this on all sides. Now, obviously, we're not advocating for, or Black Lives Matter, or any of these activists who are out here in the streets are not advocating for violence against police. They're advocating for police not using violence against citizens, and so we have to be mindful of what the sort of core cause is here for the for the movement and for the movements in sort of this social justice moment. But violence is never going to be the answer on either end of these things. However, we have to allow for the possibility that individual bad actors are going to take extreme measures and take advantage of some of the vulnerabilities of this situation. And that's what Dallas looks like to me.
There has been a call. We played clips earlier this hour from Dallas Police Chief David Brown and President Obama. Both are calling, in essence, for support for law enforcement, and perhaps without saying it, for compassion for those who work, who wear the uniform. You know, coming on the heels, we talked about this a couple moments ago, but coming on the heels of the shootings earlier this week in Baton Rouge and in St. Paul, that's a strange
junction. It is a very, this is one of the most complicated moments, particularly for us in the media, but obviously for all of the families. Remember, there are families right now that are in mourning. The Sterling family, the Castile family, the families of all of these officers are going to be in mourning, communities in mourning, and we want to be sensitive and sensible about that. But the reality is that for those families and communities from the Sterling family and Castile family, it's very difficult for them to wrap their heads around feeling compassion about law enforcement. And for all of the communities that have been impacted by the use of excessive force and the sort of petty tyranny of some of our law enforcement policies across this nation, it's a very complicated moment. Again, we are not advocating, nor do any of the leadership or the members of the Movement for Black Lives advocate any kind of violence directed at police. But it's a tough conundrum to ask folks now to be compassionate, because that's what we're asking for in the first place, is to treat folks like human beings, to be compassionate and to consider the humanity of all people in this nation when it comes to police. policing. We have not been able to do that. And I think that's what makes the shooting in Dallas so complicated, because, of course, our hearts go out to that community, to those law enforcement officers, to their families, to their partners, to their children. And we would ask folks to remember that that is all that we're asking, is for people to have human compassion and for law enforcement to have human compassion in their interactions with people of color, poor folks, black folks, in a way that's commensurate with what wearing that badge and wearing that uniform is supposed to be about in this mm-hmm. nation.
All right. We've got calls and comments coming into Radio Times. Let's get to some of the comments from Dave, I believe this is. Justice will not be realized until every individual gets the same attention and resources as the death of a police officer. Dorothy Johnson Spite, your reaction to that?
I just wanted to piggyback on what was said about the compassion. I think that the compassion needs to be for every human being. And until we have that for one another, we will continue to be at this juncture. You know, I think that Obama was asking, our president was asking for compassion in that maybe there's no more of this type of thing happening. No copycats, you know, going after police officers because of what happened earlier in the week with the two gentlemen that were murdered at the hands of police. So compassion for one another as a human being, you know, is what we must, that's where we got to go. We've got to find that compassion and that, you know, support for each other.
Yeah.
And we, find a way to heal through this.
We've gotten, I'm reading a note from our producers on the screen here. We've apparently gotten a number of calls which ask why does no one seem to protest when a black person kills a white person? And this seems to be a sentiment among some of our listeners.
These kinds of comments are red herrings, and they're not only unwarranted in this conversation, but they are unnecessary. We know from the data that almost all violent crime is committed intra-racially. 80% or more of all violent crime is committed intra-racially. People commit violent crimes where they live and around the folks that they live with. And so we just need to set those kinds of comments aside. That's not what this is about. When you look at the data, black folks are 2.5 times more likely to be pulled over, 2.5 times more likely to be killed or murdered in some of these interactions. I mean, think about this for a moment. For the folks asking this question, can you imagine if members of your community were being shot down by law enforcement for being pulled over for a broken taillight? How many times we that's everything from Walter Scott to Castile, right? Think about the pettiness of some of these stops and what the consequences are for some of the families in the communities. And again, the data is very clear on race and crime.
And a quick comment from you, Mark Kelly Tyler.
Yeah, so I just listen, I agree with what my co-guest was just saying here, and I'm just thinking about the fact that if the community felt the same kind of support that law enforcement shows for one another, I think that would begin to turn the tide. You know, I was down at our district headquarters the other day trying to get to 3801 Market, and they're across the street from the hospital. And I mean, there were about 100 police cars out, and I didn't know. I'm like, oh, you know, I'm in the middle of, like, the president must be in town or something. So I'm thinking I'm stuck in traffic. They were all there because an officer who had been wounded, I think in Delaware, I'm not exactly sure what happened, was being discharged. And so this was their way
Delaware
of
County.
Yeah, so
yeah.
They were
showing support.
I mean it was absolutely incredible. Like 100 or more officers, like, rolling out for an officer who had been wounded. Now, I mean, that's great. I mean, I wish as clergy we'd have that kind of support for one another and for colleagues to stand with each other. But when you watch as an officer someone like what happened in North Charleston last year, and you stand by silently and you don't stand with the community in the same kind of way and express that kind of outrage, then, as you said, it becomes very complicated. And we're in a difficult place right now. And so that's all the community is saying, is stand with us the way you stand with each other, because you come from us. You know, you weren't born as a police officer. You were born in these communities. And so you need to stand with us as well against the bad actors. And when that begins to happen, I think that begins to turn the tide and to bring us closer together.
All right. This note, by the way, we will continue our regularly scheduled broadcast of Radio Times in Review at 11 as Attorney General Loretta Lynch's marks on the Dallas shootings have been delayed. And we'll have coverage on this mass shooting in Dallas throughout the day on WHYY in Philadelphia and other NPR stations. So stay with us. Okay, back to the phones. Don in Bryn Mawr, welcome to Radio Times.
Good morning. I have a question about for Mark, actually. Mark Tyler, about the place of prayer and spirituality. in keeping the peace and keeping these marches peaceful, in protecting the marchers, the police, and everybody involved while we go about trying to heal the wounds that have been caused all around us.
Thank you, John. Mark?
Listen, I've always advocated for peaceful protest, but, you know, as we say to people who are marching with us, peaceful does not mean that you don't have to show your anger, show your outrage. And I think there's this idea that somehow religion is supposed to be persons meek and mild and quiet and just kind of, you know, just humbly going about their business. But that's not the way that I read the Bible. I mean, the prophets were often, you know, persons who irritated those in power. I just preached a series on Elijah. And when the king saw Elijah, he said, oh, here comes this troublemaker again. I mean, that's why how he described him. He was a troublemaker because he kept pointing out to King Ahab, you know, how disconnected you are from God. And so to me, I think that's more of our role. And if you want to keep peace, then it's about doing the right thing. And I tell people all the time, you want the protest to go away? Then do what's right. That's exactly all you have to do.
So let's look at the federal level. Is enough happening on the federal level, the Justice Department, the Attorney General's office to improve relations?
Absolutely not.
Not.
Absolutely not.
I didn't even get the words out of my mouth, James.
Agreed.
Listen, we want peaceful protest, but remember, we want peaceful policing. And what the federal government has got to think about right now is, number one, can the federal government put in metrics to keep track of these extrajudicial killings? They have not done it. Journalism has. The Washington Post has. The Malcolm X grassroots movement has. There have been other entities that are trying to keep count and keep track of these. We need the federal government to do that. Number two, we have got to consider a complete overhaul of how police are trained and the different tactics and strategies they use to police our communities. We have to radically rethink how policing works in the 21st century. We absolutely do. And unless and until the federal government steps in to impose some of these reforms and some of these really sort of overturning the ways in which we've been doing things in the past. You know, the shooter, the law enforcement officer in the Castile shooting, you know, 4 years experience. And this is a narrative we've heard before. He doesn't seem to have had a whole lot of experience. And the question is, what kind of training did he have? And if the training's not built into the system for him to not shoot someone who is essentially being pulled over for a broken taillight, then we've got to think about the system as not operating in the way that it needs to, which means it needs a complete overhaul. The federal government can do that. Department of Justice can initiate that. But that's not what's happening right now.
Dorothy Johnson Spite, your opinion?
I agree with him. I mean, I think that the federal government needs to be involved and needs to be fairly involved in a fair, just way.
Involved further.
Involved further. And it definitely is not something that can be fixed with a Band-Aid. I think it has to be kind of an overhaul and looked at from all aspects to create the change that we want to see.
And Mark Kelly Tyler, some last comments from you as we wrap up the hour. Again, the Dallas shootings of police officers, and also separately the two shootings this week in St. Paul and in Baton Rouge.
Yeah, so absolutely. Number one, I think that the federal government has to be involved. When you talk about the history of black people and our advance, or, you know, going back the other direction, it's usually been at the hands of the federal government. States' rights have not been very good for us.
Start with the Justice Department? Where would you start?
Well, yeah, absolutely. So the DOJ report in Philly, for example, you come in the city, you say, here are 48 things you do wrong, here are the recommendations, but there's no teeth in it. So how are we going to punish the city if they don't implement this? What are we going to take away from you to make you comply? There was no teeth in it. So the feds have to do something more than that. But I do want to say this. Number one, we want justice for the Castile family and for the Sterling family. And I also want to say, again, you know, what officers do is incredibly brave. The folk who went in the Pulse nightclub, many of them probably didn't agree with LGBTQ people, but they put their lives on the line. So I want to say it is complicated, and we do need to support people. But that does not mean letting you off.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us last minute this hour. Mark Kelly Tyler, pastor of Mother Bethel African Methodist Episcopal Church. James Peterson, director of Africana Studies and associate professor of English at Lehigh University and host of The Remix, a weekly podcast from WHYY. And also Dorothy Johnson Spite, founder and executive director of Mothers in Charge, a violence prevention and education group. And stay with us here at WHYY in Philadelphia and other NPR stations throughout the day for continuing coverage of the shootings in Dallas. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan in for Marty Moskowain. Thank you for joining us for Radio Times.